Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Only Murders in My Mind. And with me, as usual, I have the marvellous Liz Hedgecock.
Hello.
And the wonderful... Hello, Mike. Mike Jackson.
I'm not quite sure. It's wonderful followed by giggles and laughter.
Well, you complained, didn't you, before? So
I'm always complaining.
This is very true. The querulous Mike Jackson.
Good
afternoon, Liz, and good afternoon, Carol.
Oh, thank you. Before we start today, we've got a really good one today. A couple of weeks ago now, we did a podcast on Hercule Poirot, and we were staggered, I think I can use that word, at the views we got. And this was just on YouTube. And it's sort of hovering around now 1,900 views, which for our little podcast is like, wow. We're not quite sure why. We hope it's because it's good.
Yeah. So if anyone has any idea of why that particular episode seems to have gone a bit viral, then please let us know so we can do it again.
Yay.
And if it's piqued your curiosity, it's episode 26. So if you want to go and listen to it, if you haven't done already, then you can be part of that growing number of people across the world.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and that was the other thing. We looked at some stats for, I'm not very good with stats, but we looked at some stats from Spotify, and that shows you the world map and our numbers of people listening abroad's growing. We've got quite a following in the USA now, Mexico, in South America, Papua New Guinea. I'm trying to think of where else.
Well, we had some lovely comments too on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, we did, yeah.
I think, was it episode 26?
That was that episode.
We had somebody from Mexico on there, somebody from America, and I forget where the third, there was another one there, was from somewhere else within the world. So we are just worldwide.
We are. Speaking of worldwide, actually, I don't know if anyone's come across it. I've started playing a little computer game called Global, and you have to try and guess the country. Oh. You get warmer. And I'm discovering how woeful my knowledge of the world is, because, you know, you'll pin it down to Central America and then you think, right, okay.
That's quite big.
Yeah,
Central America.
Like, yeah, anyway, Eastern Europe even. I'm thinking, right, okay, so it's next to this country, but it could be so many of them.
Fail miserably at geography, I hasten to add. So
there we go.
Yeah, the world got too big for me. I was all right when we did Great Britain. After that, it just sort of blew my mind.
Well, it feels like it's changed a lot since I was a kid as well.
Yeah, countries that did exist don't, and countries that don't exist do. And so anyway, we'd like to thank everybody for that massive sort of viewing rate. And
it's been a super boost.
Yes.
So thank you for listening to us.
It made us very happy. And what we're going to talk about today is unusual. And why is it unusual, Mike?
It's because we're going today to talk about unusual murder weapons that have been used in science fiction. And we've been doing some research and have found some very, very strange weapons or have been used to dispose of people.
Well, mine are weapons that have been used to murder ordinary people, but are unusual weapons.
Oh,
so right. Mine aren't science fiction. So what
crime
have you
fiction,
got?
I suppose. It
crime
is.
Fiction, yes. And crime
all
fact.
All mine are crime fiction. As well.
Right.
So go on, Mike. Well, no, don't hit us with one. Reveal your weapon.
I think the favourite one I've found so far is from a Roald Dahl story. Now, most people, when they think of Roald Dahl, think of all the children's books that he's written.
See, I think Tales of the Unexpected and the woman and the credits and the kind of the musical box tune.
That's right. But I think lots of people don't. You know, I think a lot of people don't realise that he did write some other very short macabre stories too. And one of them was called A Lamb to the Slaughter. And in Lamb to the Slaughter, there's this apparently this couple, she's pregnant, her husband is a police officer or retired police officer, and he comes home one day and says he's going to leave her. And she's cooking dinner at the time. She gets really angry. And when he turns his back on her, she hits him on the head with a frozen leg of lamb.
That's going to hurt.
Yes. Mm. Well, it did more than hurt. It killed him.
Mm.
And so then she had to think, well, how do I get around this? So she thought the best thing to do would be to cook the murder weapon so there was no evidence. So she did. She cooked the leg of lamb. And when the investigating police officers came round to talk to her, she fed them the lamb and a glass of whiskey and got away with the murder. Ah. It just struck me as humorous as well as slightly macabre.
Yes. Mm. I mean, I'm just going to say, if there are only two of them for dinner, how can they have a whole leg of lamb?
Yes. Yes.
Mm. Although maybe she was planning maybe shepherd's pie.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe she was expecting visitors.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, I've got one here. Mm. And this is a true life one. A man called Reginald Helmsley Dodgendale. In 1988, was killed with a pumpernickel bread roll. It must have been quite a hefty one. I think that was in America. It would have to be in America.
So what happened? I mean, did they throw it at him?
No, he was clouted on the back of the head with it, I think. But it must have had a brick in it or something. Say, it
must have been a big roll.
Pumpernickel bread.
Yeah. Maybe like it was overbaked. Well, isn't pumpernickel quite a hard bread?
Yes, it is. But even so, I was thinking, that takes some doing, doesn't it? Killing somebody with a loaf of bread that isn't choking them. You know, eat this. It's horrible. I choked.
Mm.
Yeah. You got any, Liz?
Oh, I was thinking. I mean, an example, and this is not so much from a crime story. It's a kind of a something I've seen going around on Facebook, that classic thing of, you know, someone invites friend round for, you know, for drinks or whatever, and, you know, they have drinks together, hot day. And the host has five drinks and she's absolutely fine. Her guest has a drink and keels over. They're having it out of the same jug of punch. How come the guest dies and the host doesn't?
Give in.
It's a hot day.
Oh, right.
Give Very in. Hot day.
This so is trying to get me to use my brain.
The host has had lots of drinks.
Dehydrated?
The guest only had one drink. So the guest was taking longer to drink her drink on this hot day. What might have happened? Because if it's a hot day, what might you do with your drink?
Put ice in it.
Yeah.
Ah, nice. And the poison's in the ice.
Oh.
Yes.
It's funny, actually, because when I used to talk about travel vaccines, we used to get a lady who used to come and talk about how to stay safe when you go abroad. And one of the things was, don't put ice in your drinks in some countries.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because the water isn't. Just because it's, you know, don't drink the water, but the ice is okay. It isn't.
It's still water. Mm. So another possible unusual means of murder, and this one came to mind, would be a bell pull.
Yes.
Yes. Anyone acquainted with the Sherlock Holmes story, The Speckled Band?
That's where the snake comes down the bell pull, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, because Sherlock Holmes looks at the bell pull and thinks, hang on a minute, that's not real. It doesn't go anywhere. It's just attached to the ceiling.
So it was so just a ladder for the snake.
It basically was, yeah.
And when you think about it.
Trained the snake.
How a story like that is copied or adapted in many ways. Because I can't think of which James Bond, but I'm sure there's been a James Bond before where.
With a snake coming
with
in.
With a snake coming down on a piece of string from the ceiling. Somebody's.
Yeah.
You know, taking away the loft or something, hatch, and a snake's been dropped down on a piece of string.
Oh, the one I remember from James Bond was the big spider crawling across his chest. And I think it was like a banana spider. I don't think they're actually that poisonous, but...
What's a banana spider like?
It's huge and hairy. Like a tarantula. I think that's the other name for it.
Talking of James Bond, there's also Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Where she was murdered by being painted in...
Gold
head to toe, which stopped the the body from breathing.
Yeah.
I think what I remember is, so long as you leave a bit at the base of the spine, I think it is.
Yeah.
That was okay, the story. But if the whole lot gets covered, then
so it stops you sweating and you get sort of toxic. I think that's the whole idea. I know this because when my mum and dad emigrated to Australia on the, was it the £10, the 20?
£10 assisted passage.
Yeah.
Oh, £10 bombs?
Yeah.
Ah.
There was a little lad who died because he couldn't perspire.
Oh, no.
And when they got into really hot water, you know, hot areas going on the boat too.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I remember my mum saying, oh, you know, little Johnny died because... He couldn't he couldn't perspire. Well, obviously his parents didn't know anything about it. It's very, very real thing. So, So it's that same thing applies if you cover somebody in.
In gold paint.
In gold paint. I've got one here and this is something that we don't see anymore. And that's a cane sword.
A what?
It's a cane with a sword in the middle.
Oh, right.
Oh, like a sword stick?
Yeah.
Like a sword stick. Right, yeah.
And... You used to see them.
People would notice that.
Yeah.
If you were.
Oh, the days have got. Well, I went
Victorian era. I should think. Yeah. You would have had lots of. Because most gentlemen had a walking stick of some description.
Have you ever been tempted to have a sword stick, Mike?
No, I do enjoy a walking stick. Not because I need one, but I do enjoy walking with a walking stick. So I made my own walking stick.
You whittled it out of a bigger walking stick, didn't you?
I didn't actually whittle it.
Take some time, I imagine.
No, I went to a cane store in London that's very famous for its canes and its umbrellas.
Oh, I remember you going there. Yes, the one with the lovely window.
Yes, and I bought a Mary Poppins umbrella with a para handle. And
why am I not surprised by this?
I'm just worried that you're now going to tell me, and when I opened it up, out came this sword.
Well, I asked
and then the para bit me.
I asked him about cane swords, and he said, you can't sell them anymore because obviously it's a deadly weapon.
Yes.
He said, I have got some in the back if you'd like to look at some, though. And I was like, no, I better not.
Is that the same as, would you want to come upstairs and see my etchings?
It could be.
So why do you think we're drawn to unusual weapons? Why do they stick in the mind in the way that they do?
I think it's a bit like you getting us tried to guess about that ice.
Mm.
It leaves you wondering and you can't for the life of you work out
how happened.
It was done. Which is what it's all about, murder, mystery and crime.
Yeah.
He's trying to work out.
You
almost want to be one step ahead of the detective, whether it's Poirot or Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
They sort of pointed out, you think, oh, yes, that's clever.
Mm. That's obvious. I was going to say, one of the things that really irritates me when I watch films and television programmes is when they have a needle and they inject it into the neck and the person just drops like that. Well, first of all, that would only happen if you got it into the bloodstream. So you need to get it into the carotid artery.
So you'd have to be very accurate with your random plunge.
Or when they inject into the arm and the person collapses straight away. I've tried to get blood out of people that were moving. And believe me, it's not easy.
Mm.
So it isn't, they make that look really simple.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's not.
Yeah.
Mm. One of the other ones that I found, which quite intrigued me, was it's a historical mystery. I've not read this. It's called The Name of the Rose by Umberto Eco.
Yes. Oh, I've read that. Yes.
And
it's a cracker.
Yeah. Poisoned manuscript pages.
Oh.
The pages are poisoned, and what most people do is tend to lick their fingers.
Yes.
To turn the page over, and as they're licking their fingers, so they're getting the
and
poison.
And it's a very old book as well, so it probably does have thick, dry pages that you would have. Yes.
Clever. I thought that was
very clever, yes.
Yes. Something like that sneaked into one of your books, didn't it? Something similar.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah. Is that where you got the idea from?
It was. I do reference The Name of the Rose in there because...
I never realised
when it's
that.
Discovered, one of the characters says, oh, it's just like in that film. And then it happens on Fee's book and she's like, oh, The Name of the Rose. And he goes, have you got a copy? And, you know, I think he also said, I didn't know it was a book as well.
Yeah.
So, yes, with Sean Connery as William of Baskerville, the monk.
Yes.
No, sorry.
Yeah, that's the film.
Oh, it's the film.
Of The Name of the Rose.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was very good. My daughter has inherited a poison ring, which I know isn't the actual method, but it's the method of getting the poison into the drink, yes, or something. Yeah. And yeah, it just, there's just a little thing at the back and you push it and it clicks open and you can drop the poison or the tablet in. And then, all you have to do is put it on your knee and press it and it closes again. And, you know, who would notice that?
Yeah. So, I mean, you just think it was a cocktail ring or something, wouldn't you? Yeah. Wow. So that's Are you ever worried about that? I mean, I know you get on very well.
But... We do get on well, yes, yeah. I notice if she was wearing it. She's not a ring person. Yeah. She doesn't wear many rings. So if she was wearing that, I'd go, can you take that off before we go out for cocktails, please, darling?
So going back to the James Bond thing, why, you know, why do you think the unusual weapons and the gadgets and all of the, you know, the stuff with Q, why is that such a thing?
I think partly because it's unbelievable. You know, when you're watching James Bond, you know that none of the car chases or the weird gadgets actually exist. It just adds to that sort of taking you out of the present and into another world, which is not real.
Yeah, I think it's also making you a promise. You know, if Q gives James Bond some bizarre gadget, you know darn well that is going to get used later in the film. You've got to think about that. How on earth? You know, with the clicky pen or whatever, or, you know, the disappearing car.
Yeah, and the garrote thing in his watch.
Oh, yes.
It comes out of his watch,
Yes.
And usually James Bond is turning to these implements when most other people would have been dead. You know, he's been struggling for 20 minutes and suddenly remembers that he's got a poison tip in his ring or something.
The laser nearly cut him in half, though, didn't it?
Yes.
That Goldfinger as well?
I don't know, but it looked very painful.
Yes,
just
got out of that in time, didn't it?
I think sometimes too, I mean, going on to the more gory, I remember watching Killing Eve, which is a very gory.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
And some of the weapons that she, I'm sure there was one where she just pulled a sort of, not so much a knife, something out of her hair, something that was keeping her hair up.
Kind of a big sharp hatpin type thing.
Yes, it was, yeah.
And stuck it in his guy's eye.
That would work.
Yeah.
Yes.
But with that, it's the suddenness of it happening. Yeah. Something quite innocuous, like a hair hatpin, just comes out of her hair and is in somebody's eye within seconds. Yeah. And it just shocks you, it's meant to.
Well, that's the thing, you know, Victorians carrying these deadly weapons, just keeping their hats on.
I wonder how many women use them in self-defence. Mm. You know, when they were common,
you'd wear. I think the suffragettes probably did.
Yeah, two or three in your hat, wouldn't you?
Definitely. Yeah, and I mean, no one could take you up on it, could they?
No.
Yeah.
So yes, Mike, you're shuffling some paper.
No, I mean, I'm just looking to. I mean, I did some research about these. Ah. And another one I've not seen. This it's a remake of Black Christmas.
Don't know that
made
one.
In 2006, and the killer sharpens a candy cane. Is what the Americans
have at Christmas. Oh, yeah,
not quite Death by Chocolate.
No.
Death by Candy.
Stab a security guard.
One of the things I saw once that stayed with me ever since, because it was absolutely shocking at the time, was a couple were romancing in front of the fire. And then she turned her head away. And when she turned back, she had razor blades in her teeth.
Oh, you watch some lovely
shows. She cut his throat. You know, and I was like, and it's always stayed with me because it was really, because they seem to be so in love.
Unexpected.
Yeah.
So where did they come from?
That came from, were the razor blades?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, she had them secreted in her clothes that were at the side of her. Yeah.
Okay.
But she planned it all, you know.
Well, you'd have to. I mean, you wouldn't normally have razor blades in your kit, would you?
I mean, and then I was thinking, she's going to cut her tongue. I mean, does it really matter?
Well, I think it would matter. I think that would hurt like Billy. But there we go. But going back to the Q thing.
Yeah.
I had to go at writing my own kind of Q scene, as in James Bond Q. Because in the Maisie Frobisher books, one of my characters is going into what we might call a tricky situation, is Maisie. And Mrs. Carter, who's kind of like a mentor to her, basically, you know, says, have you got anything to look, you know, to defend yourself with? And they go through a bit of a scene. So I'll read a bit from it. "I do have the gun which Lord Montgomery gave me," ventured Maisie. Mrs. Carter stared at her, then dissolved into peals of laughter. "My dear, you can't possibly go into that house with a gun. What if someone finds it? You might as well announce that you don't trust your host, unless you'd rather he thought you were planning to shoot him. Better this way." She put a reticule into Maisie's hands. "Unpack it, please." Maisie delved into the reticule and brought out a small pouch. Inside was a sewing kit, needles threaded with fine silk, a card of pins and a tiny pair of scissors. "I'm really not sure. I find a jab with a needle or a pin can work wonders in a tight spot," said Mrs. Carter. "The pins are fairly harmless. The needle with yellow thread, however, has been dipped in a muscle relaxant. It will have an effect within a few minutes, and providing you're in a one-on-one situation, you should be able to escape. The needle with red thread," she looked at Maisie, "don't use that one unless you absolutely have to. It is poisonous. And if you need something more straightforward, the scissors are deadly sharp." "I see," said Maisie, closing the pouch hastily and returning it to the reticule. Next, she pulled out a small lidded cylinder. "Should I open it?" she asked, looking at it doubtfully. Mrs. Carter laughed. "Don't worry, the worst you will get from that is a sneezing fit, since it contains pepper. Useful for seasoning food, but also handy for throwing into an adversary's face, and particularly the eyes. That will buy you at least an extra minute." Maisie put it back and drew out a pen. "What does this do?" "Well, it writes," said Mrs. Carter, "but it does so in invisible ink. Easy to write a letter and include a private message between the lines or in the margins. Obviously, you'll need to carry a normal pen as well." Finally, Maisie extracted a small packet of hairpins. "I assume these aren't to keep my hair tidy." Mrs. Carter regarded her critically. "You do have several stray wisps, Miss Frobisher, which would certainly annoy me. However, these are for picking locks. But I don't know how to. Which is one of the reasons why I invited you to call on me," said Mrs. Carter. "I shall ask Avic to fetch some locks of standard make and more hairpins, and we shall see how you get on. After that, we shall move to hands-on self-defence." Maisie eyed her hostess's plump form. "Oh, but I couldn't." Mrs. Carter giggled. "Not on me, you goose. No, I shall demonstrate on Avic, and then you may have a go. Don't worry, we won't hurt him." A tap at the door signalled the entry of Avic with a tea tray. "We shan't hurt you, Avic, shall we?" "I doubt it, madam," said Avic gravely. "And in return, I shall not hurt either of you." "Agreed," said Mrs. Carter. "Now, if you could bring us those locks and a packet of pins, we shall begin our first lesson."
Hey! I keep saying, you know, you can get lock picking kits on Amazon.
Really? I'm not surprised.
Yeah. I'm going to put that on my wish list for Christmas.
I like to play around with AI. So I thought, I wonder what ChatGPT would make of me asking for some unusual weapons that could be used in future stories. Mm-hmm. Unusual murder weapons that could be used in future stories. And these are just some of the ones it came out with. You can tell me which one you like best. A lethal virtual reality headset that induces fatal seizures or heart attacks through specific visual patterns.
Ooh.
I think we like that one.
Yeah, a killer swarm of drones that suffocate the victim by forming an airtight seal around his head.
Ugh, that's grim.
A poisoned temporary tattoo, which is laced with a substance that's absorbed through the skin.
Yikes.
Deadly noise cancelling headphones that emit a harmful frequency when activated.
That's where I thought the virtual reality headset was going to go, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this one. A killer karaoke machine which releases toxic gas when a specific song is sung.
One that obviously doesn't like.
If you murder a tune, it'll murder you.
Murder on the dance floor.
Killer robot vacuum.
The Roomba of Doom.
A cleaning robot that releases a toxic gas while operating.
And then cleans up afterwards.
Murderous food delivery drone. A drone that tampers with food en route, adding lethal substances.
How would it do that?
I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm just asking.
That's for us to...
You might have to ask AI about that. Yeah.
Or a killer keyboard. A computer keyboard that releases a contact poison on frequently used keys. So I took one of those.
Don't hit that E.
I took the poison temporary tattoo.
Oh, nice.
Right. This is called The Last Impression. Mia beamed as she admired the intricate dragon tattoo on her forearm. It's gorgeous, Zach. I can't believe you designed this yourself. Zach grinned, his eyes glinting behind thick-rimmed glasses. Anything for my favourite customer? It's a special ink, too. Lasts longer than regular temp tattoos. As Mia left the pop-up booth, Zach's smile faded. He glanced at his phone, a text from an unknown caller. Is it done? Yes, he typed back, hands trembling. 3 days later, Mia's roommate found her unconscious. By the time the ambulance arrived, she was gone. The coroner was baffled. Healthy 25-year-olds don't just die. Detective Inspector Sarah Chen stared at the vivid dragon tattoo on the victim's arm. Something nagged at her. The tattoo was too perfect, too fresh for a three-day-old temporary design. Chen's investigation led her to Zach's booth, now abandoned. His landlord mentioned he'd left town suddenly. Chen dug deeper, uncovering a trail of mysterious deaths across the country, each victim sporting a stunning temporary tattoo. Miles away in a dingy motel room, Zach received another text. New target, Liverpool, blue butterfly design. He began mixing his specialised ink, adding a clear, odourless liquid. The poison was undetectable, absorbed slowly through the skin, leaving no trace. Zach paused, studying his reflection. He touched the small tattoo behind his ear, the mark of the shadowy organisation that had recruited him. They'd promised him so much, he hadn't known the cost would be his soul. As he packed his supplies, Zach wondered how long before the police caught up with him. Part of him hoped it would be soon.
Ooh.
Now, you'd have to wear gloves, wouldn't you, when you're handling that?
I've said this before, and I apologise for people that have heard this before, but I watched a detective series once where it was a bike gang who all wanted the same bike gang tattoo done. Mm-hmm. So a member of the gang was a tattoo artist, only they had been responsible for his boyfriend's death, and he inked them all with some of his blood that was infected.
Oh, right.
And the whole gang died gradually, one by one.
Ooh.
I have to say, Carol, you watch some lovely
programs. I do. I wonder how I sleep at night.
I wonder how you sleep at night.
But you see, that is a possibility, because I mean, one of the things with tattoos you've got to be careful about is you can get infectious blood-borne diseases like hepatitis if it's not a clean needle. So you're taking that one step further and actually adding something into it that is going to do the deed. It's going to kill them, isn't it? That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Something else I like is when you have an unusual, you know, weapon or means of delivery or whatever, which then turns out to be a decoy or a distraction. Thinking about like Hercule Poirot, and I think at one point they discover a blowpipe, and it's in one of the kind of the locked room type.
It was in an aeroplane.
Death in the Clouds?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. And they find that, and they're trying to work out how on earth anyone could have used it without noticing. And eventually I think Hercule Poirot realizes, well, of course they didn't do it. I mean, you know, talk about draw attention to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, much easier just to put whatever it is.
On him,
yeah,
the person that died. Yeah,
I'm trying to remember if it's a Knox's rule or not. You know, when we did the 10 rules of detection,
I can't remember.
And I think he was dead against kind of untraceable poisons with no, like, you know, you can't smell them, you can't taste them, you can't see them, whatever.
But we do have them now. That's the thing. You know, I mean, one of the ones. This is a true one. This was a lady in Texas. She claimed self-defense after she killed her husband by treading on his head 25 times in stiletto heels.
Wow.
So he must have been a right bad one if
that was self-defense.
25. Yeah. See, take some balancing. This is what I'm thinking. You can't sort of do it in a rage. You've got to sort of balance to do that sort of damage. But one of the ones that has been
I wonder if she practiced, like trying to, I don't know, walk on a watermelon or something.
Yes.
You know, yeah, well, keep your balance, like log rolling.
Yeah, yeah. As I say, it sounds, wow, doesn't sound easy anyway.
No, not
but
at
one of the things that has been used in detective series, and I'm sure has been used in reality, are the 3D printed gun.
Yes.
Oh,
and weird. When I know 3D printing is magnificent and it can do all sorts of things because my husband used to use it in his job. Mm. However, when I researched this for this podcast, I was absolutely shocked to see that there are kits you can get online. Once you've printed your gun, you can get the metal bits as kits. Oh. What's that saying? You can only use them once, I think, but they are easy to destroy because they're plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really wanted to, you could swallow the metal bits. Oof. Yeah, no, but you could.
Yes,
in theory, you know. So that's a bit a bit scary, really. Mm.
It is.
You do wonder, don't you? We began this episode by talking about the success we were having with those, nearly 2,000 views on episode 26. And you do wonder if today we're talking about all these gruesome ways of killing people. We've just killed off whatever audience.
Unfortunately, Mike, people are absolutely fascinated by things like this. Yeah. Unfortunately, I am. So, but purely for research, obviously.
Oh, of course.
Naturally, yes.
Yeah, so, either of you got anything else you'd like to put forward?
I think now we've probably killed enough people or given people enough ideas as to what they might do with that frozen leg of lamb.
Yes. So if any of you have like a great idea for a short story with an unusual murder weapon, then our blog is always available
it
for you
indeed,
to post.
Yes.
So
we're about due to read some listeners' stories out, aren't we, Mike? Do you not think?
Yeah, I think we do have one or two people who are joining in with our weekly writing prompt on the blog. So if you haven't done and want to have a look at it, please come and visit us.
Mm. Yeah. And what's that address?
Onlymurdersinmymind.wordpress.com.
Well remembered.
Thank you.
Sorry, I put you on the spot there.
The writing prompt comes out every Friday morning. And it's a picture prompt.
Boom.
Just inviting you to write a story. It doesn't have to be a murder mystery. Anything you like.
Yeah, because it sort of narrows our field if we keep it in just a murder mystery.
Yes.
Yeah. We're interested in anybody that wants to write. So so we'll draw that to a close for today. Thank you for listening, and thank you for sort of hitting all the buttons on the bottom of the YouTube.
I think what Carol's trying to say is if you could press the like button, that would be much appreciated. If you leave a comment, that'd even be more appreciated.
Yes.
And you can subscribe.
Yes.
Or, as Carol says, just hit a button.
Yeah, just hit all those buttons.
Not the off button.
No.
Not the off button or the stop button.
No,
not those ones. The other buttons, yes.
And we'll be here again at the same time next week. So until then, bye everyone.
Bye.
You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music in Peril was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.